Right now, there are just brilliant engineers walking into AI interviews. I mean, they're writing flawless Python code, passing all the algorithmic challenges, and then they're just completely failing the system design
Oh,
round.
absolutely. We see it every single day.
It's wild, right? Because they have years of classical machine learning experience under their belts. They understand random forests. They know scikit-learn inside and out, and they can tune hyperparameters in their sleep.
Right, they know the math.
Exactly. But the moment they are asked to architect a solution using a large language model, like a true foundation model, they just hit a wall.
It is, I'd say it's the single most common point of failure in the industry right now, because passing that interview, it's not about writing cleaner Python code.
No, not at
It's
all.
about demonstrating this fundamental shift in how you think about scale. Like the actual physics of classical machine learning, they simply do not apply to foundation models.
Yeah, it reminds me of the leap from building a custom single-family home to engineering a massive metropolitan transit system.
Oh, that's a really good way to put it.
Right, because when you build a house, the environment is contained. You draw the blueprints, you route the plumbing, you frame the
And
walls.
if something leaks, you know exactly which pipe to check.
Exactly. But an LLM is a transit system. You are managing the chaotic flow of millions of commuters, integrating electrical grids with subway schedules.
And you're dealing with those cascading failures.
Yes, where like a delay on the red line causes a power surge across the entire city.
And that cascading failure is exactly what trips up candidates, you know?
Right.
In a classical ML model, variables are isolated. But in a foundation model, every single variable is just deeply entangled at this massive scale.
Which is exactly what we are dissecting today. If you are gearing up for an AI engineering interview and you need to make that conceptual leap from classical ML to foundation models, you really need a mental framework to navigate this new terrain.
You absolutely do.
So today's deep dive is centered on this macro trend that is just completely rewriting the rules of the industry. We're talking about three axes and two heresies, and specifically how open models are catching the frontier.
It's such a critical framework for anyone entering the field right now. Because, I mean, we are witnessing this massive arms race, right, between the closed proprietary frontier models and these rapidly evolving open source
And the
models.
gap is closing fast.
It really is. But to understand how open models are closing that gap and to prove in an interview that you know how to leverage them, you have to understand the specific mechanics of how they scale.
Well, let's get right into those mechanics, starting with the first part of the framework, which is the three axes of scaling open models.
Let's do it.
So, to ground this, let's look at how someone from my background, classical machine learning, how we typically visualize scaling.
It's usually a pretty flat map, right?
Yeah, exactly. We usually operate on a flat two-dimensional map. On the x-axis, I have my data volume. Like I can just feed the model more rows in a CSV. And on the y-axis, I have my algorithm tweaking. I run a grid search. I adjust my learning rate. Maybe I prune some decision trees.
Right. It's a linear, predictable space.
Very predictable. Cause and effect are tightly coupled.
You add data, the accuracy goes up, you adjust the learning rate, the loss curve smooths out. It's comfortable.
Extremely comfortable. But moving to foundation models means moving off that 2D map into a 3D volumetric space.
Yeah, the rules change entirely.
Right, because we are now scaling along three interdependent axes simultaneously. And this is where I really want to dig into the actual engineering. What are these three dimensions? And mechanically, why does trying to navigate them like a flat map cause a system design failure in an interview?
Well, let's look at what actually happens under the hood when you scale an open model.
Yeah.
You aren't just moving on an X and Y axis anymore. You are managing three massive forces.
Okay, break those down for me.
First, you have the sheer architectural scale. So that's the parameter count, the layers of the neural network.
Right, the actual size of the brain, basically.
Exactly. Second, you have the data scale. And we are talking trillions of unstructured tokens, which is essentially the entire internet.
Just a massive fire hose of information.
Yeah. And third, you have the physical compute infrastructure. So the cluster of GPUs, the memory bandwidth, the network interconnects.
Okay, so architecture, data volume, and physical compute.
Exactly. And the danger here, the thing that catches people, is that these three axes are inextricably linked.
So you can't touch one without messing with the others.
Exactly. Let's say you're in an interview and the prompt is to improve the performance of a localized open source model. The candidate who is stuck on that 2D map, they'll give a classical answer.
Like what?
They'll say, well, I'll just scale up the model size. I'll take it from 7 billion parameters to 70 billion parameters.
Because on the 2D map, bigger model just equals better performance.
Right. But in the 3D space of foundation models, if you push along that architectural axis without mathematically calculating the tension it places on the compute axis, your system physically breaks.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
It literally breaks.
Yes. A 70 billion parameter model doesn't just take longer to train. It actually exceeds the VRAM of a single GPU. It fundamentally shatters your infrastructure.
So suddenly you have to split the model across multiple GPUs.
Exactly. And now your bottleneck isn't the algorithm at all. It's the communication latency between the chips.
Ah, because they have to talk to each other.
Right. The GPUs spend all their time just waiting for data to travel across the network rather than doing actual math.
It's like trying to fly a helicopter by just pressing a gas pedal.
Ooh, I like that.
Right. You can't do it. Like, a car is 2D. You have gas and steering. But a helicopter operates on three axes: pitch, yaw, and roll.
That is a brilliant mechanical comparison.
Thanks. Because if you push the cyclic forward to pitch the nose down and gain speed, you inherently change the lift on the rotor blades.
Which affects your altitude.
Exactly. Which requires you to adjust the collective pitch, which changes the torque, meaning you have to kick the tail rotor pedals just to keep the helicopter from spinning out of control.
And if you only push the nose down, you don't go faster. You just crash.
And in a system design interview, the interviewer is essentially handing you the controls to the helicopter.
Precisely. They'll draw a box on the whiteboard representing an open model that is suffering from, say, massive latency in production.
And they want to see what you touch first.
Right. They want to see if you understand that fixing it requires orchestrating the tension between these multidimensional vectors. If you just say, oh, train it on more data, you crash the helicopter.
Because you ignored the other axis.
Exactly. You have to demonstrate that adding trillions of tokens on the data axis requires adjusting the model parallelism on the compute axis, which then dictates the parameter limits on the architecture axis.
You really have to balance the pitch, yaw, and roll.
You do. You have to balance all three.
Which brings up a really fascinating tension. Because if managing these three axes is that delicate and interconnected, applying the strict traditional rules of machine learning to this 3D space, I mean, it seems almost impossible.
It is impossible.
Right. You can't stick to the old rule book if the physics have fundamentally changed.
And that reality is what forces engineers into the second half of this framework, which is the two heresies.
Okay. I find this concept deeply compelling. The word heresy, you know, it implies an act of rebellion against an established religion or a sacred dogma.
That's exactly what it is in this context.
So in engineering, it means you have to deliberately violate the orthodox rules you were taught in school just to make the system function at scale.
It is an act of rebellion. Classical machine learning has a very rigid orthodoxy. It's built on strict statistical control, perfect interpretability, and a deep, deep fear of noise.
Yeah, noise is the enemy.
But when you step into the world of large language models, you realize that to keep that helicopter in the air, to scale along those three axes successfully, you literally have to commit engineering heresy.
Let's put this into practice then. If I'm sitting in an interview, I need to know which sacred cows I'm supposed to slaughter on the whiteboard. I'll take a guess at the first heresy based on my Python background. In classical ML, interpretability is king.
Oh, absolutely.
If I build a random forest model to approve or deny bank loans, I can trace the exact decision path. I can tell the regulator, hey, the model denied this loan specifically because the debt-to-income ratio at node 14 exceeded a certain threshold.
Right. We demand complete transparency from the system.
And if you demand that level of mechanistic transparency from a massive foundation model, you will severely limit its capabilities, won't you?
You will. That is the first heresy sacrificing strict interpretability to unlock emergent reasoning.
Walk me through the mechanics of that sacrifice. Why are transparency and capability mutually exclusive at this scale?
It comes down to how the architecture axis scales. When you expand a model to hundreds of billions of parameters and you train it on a massive fraction of all human knowledge, the model starts acting like a simple pattern matcher.
Right. It starts doing something else.
It starts exhibiting emergent behaviors. It learns concepts. It begins to reason. It understands context in a way that just wasn't explicitly programmed into the individual weights.
It's almost like it's making leaps of logic.
Exactly. But the math happening across those billions of nonlinear layers becomes so vastly complex that no human engineer can trace a specific output back to a single specific input feature.
So the heresy is just accepting the black box.
Yes, you have to accept the black box.
But wait, I'm in an interview and I just tell the engineering director, hey, it's a giant black box, we just have to trust it. I feel like I'm going to be shown the door pretty quickly.
Oh, for sure. You can't just say trust it.
So how do you defend that heresy in a professional setting?
You defend it by showing you understand the shift in evaluation metrics. You tell the interviewer, look, because we are operating at this scale, we have to move away from mechanistic interpretability, which is debugging individual weights, and move toward behavioral evaluation.
Ah, okay. So you test how it acts, not how it thinks.
Exactly. You architect systems around the model to validate its outputs. You build guardrails, you use red teaming, you implement retrieval augmented generation to ground the model in factual data.
Mari, yeah, that makes sense.
Right. You embrace the heresy that you can't control the internal math, so you heavily engineer the inputs and the output validations.
That shows real maturity. Like, you acknowledge the loss of transparency, but you architect a system to mitigate the risk.
Exactly.
Okay, let's look at the second heresy. If the first one is about abandoning interpretability, I'm going to bet the second one involves the ultimate boogeyman of classical statistics, which is overfitting.
You are right on the money. The bias-variance trade-off is basically the most sacred law in classical ML.
Right. The golden rule is that you must perfectly balance your model. If it's too simple, it underfits the data and learns nothing.
Yep.
But if it's too complex, it overfits. It essentially memorizes the training data and then completely fails when you show it anything new in the real world.
Right. Can't generalize.
So we are taught to aggressively prune models, regularize them, and keep our data pristine and small just to avoid overfitting.
And the second heresy of scaling foundation models is taking that golden rule, throwing it out the window, and embracing massive overparameterization and chaotic data.
Wait, how does that even work mechanically? Why doesn't a 70 billion parameter model just memorize the data and become utterly useless?
It's wild, but this is one of the most counterintuitive realities of modern AI physics. In classical ML, if you plot error against model size, it forms a U-shape.
Right, the classic curve.
As the model gets bigger,
right,
the error drops, hits a sweet spot, and then rockets back up as the model overfits.
Yeah, that's what we're all taught.
But researchers discovered that if you push the model size far beyond that classical limit, like if you aggressively overparameterize it along the architectural axis and feed it trillions of noisy tokens, the curve actually descends again.
Wait, really? It pushes through the barrier of overfitting.
It does. The sheer density of parameters forces the model to stop memorizing individual noise and start learning the underlying structural representations of human language.
That is just mind-bending.
It really is. By committing the heresy of building a model that is vastly too large for traditional statistical theory and feeding it the chaotic, uncurated noise of the open internet, you actually achieve unprecedented generalization.
Wow. But that explains why interviewers will try to bait candidates with data curation questions.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
An interviewer will give you the scenario where your LLM training pipeline is ingesting messy, noisy data, and they want to see your instinct.
And the classical candidate will panic.
Right. So they'll say, oh, we need to pause training, spend 3 months meticulously cleaning and labeling the data set, and reduce the model parameters so it doesn't overfit on all this noise.
Which is the orthodox answer.
But it's the wrong answer for a foundation model. The candidate who understands the heresy will say, actually, at this scale, meticulous human labeling becomes a bottleneck.
So what do they do instead?
They'll say, we need to scale the architectural parameters in the compute axis even further, letting the sheer volume of the model isolate the signal from the noise organically.
It's about having the confidence to lean into the chaos of scale, which perfectly bridges us to the final and I think most urgent reality of this framework, which is the phenomenon of open models catching the frontier. Because these open source communities, they aren't just committing these heresies in a vacuum.
No, not at all.
They're using these three axes to actively close the gap with the massive closed-source proprietary models built by the big tech giants.
And this is where all the theory we've discussed suddenly hits the pavement in a practical engineering context.
Well, let me play devil's advocate for a moment here.
Go for it.
I'm listening to this, I'm preparing for my interview, and I understand the axes and the heresies, but I might think, look, if managing this 3D space is so precarious and requires breaking all the rules of statistics, why do I need to bother?
What do you mean?
Well, if my company needs top-tier AI performance, why don't I just pay for an API key to the biggest, most expensive proprietary frontier model on the market and let their engineers deal with the helicopter?
Okay, because if you give that answer in an interview, you have walked directly into what the industry calls the API trap.
The API trap, meaning you just default to outsourcing the engineering.
Exactly. If your solution to every complex system design problem is simply route the data to a proprietary frontier model API, you are proving to the interviewer that you are a consumer of AI, not an engineer of AI.
Oh, that's a sharp distinction.
I mean, anybody can integrate a REST API, you know? An engineer understands how to design a sustainable system.
Break down the actual engineering constraints there. Why is defaulting to a proprietary frontier API a failure in system design?
Let's use a highly realistic interview scenario. The interviewer asks you to design an AI pipeline for a regional healthcare provider.
Okay.
And the system needs to read highly sensitive patient medical records and summarize the doctor's notes.
Got it. High-stakes specialized data.
Right. Now, if you suggest sending all of that data to a closed proprietary frontier model via an API, you immediately fail on three critical engineering vectors.
Which are?
First, data privacy. You are transmitting sensitive health data outside the company's secure environment to a third-party server, which is likely a massive compliance violation.
Yeah, the lawyers are not going to like that.
Second, latency. Sending millions of tokens back and forth over a network creates a massive bottleneck for real-time applications.
Right.
And third, cost. Frontier models charge per token. So if you are summarizing millions of records every month using a massive generalized model, the inference cost will literally bankrupt the project.
So you basically ignored the physical and economic constraints of the real world. You treated the API like magic instead of a piece of infrastructure.
Precisely. But here is where the superpower of understanding this framework comes in. Because open models have mastered those three axes of scaling and embraced those heresies, they have caught up to the frontier in ways that change the math entirely.
So how does the successful candidate answer that healthcare prompt?
The successful candidate leverages the shrinking gap. They tell the interviewer, look, because open source models have scaled so efficiently, we don't need a massive, generalized, proprietary model that knows how to write poetry and code in Python just to summarize medical records.
Right. You don't need a sledgehammer for a nail.
Exactly.
Huh.
We can take a highly capable, smaller open source model. We deploy it locally, directly within the hospital's secure infrastructure to guarantee data privacy.
Oh, nice.
Then we fine-tune it specifically on medical jargon. And because the model is smaller and local, our latency drops to milliseconds, and our ongoing inference costs are a fraction of the API fees.
That is a phenomenal pivot, because you aren't just picking a tool, you are designing a strategic architecture.
Yes.
You're solving the privacy problem, the speed problem, and the budget problem all at once.
And you can only design that architecture if you understand the underlying physics of the AI landscape. You have to know that open models have scaled to a point where they are viable, powerful alternatives to the frontier.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You have to understand the multidimensional mechanics of how they got there and the counterintuitive heresies required to push them further. That is what separates an AI engineer from someone who just knows how to write an API call.
This completely reframes how someone needs to approach interview prep.
It really does.
Let's pull all of these threads together, because if you are listening to this and preparing to walk into that whiteboarding session, you need to carry this framework with you.
Absolutely.
First, you have to upgrade your mental map from 2D to 3D. You are engineering a transit system, not a house, and that means mastering the three axes.
Pitch, yaw, and roll.
Exactly. If the interviewer asks you to scale a model, you cannot just push the gas pedal on data or parameters in isolation. You have to demonstrate how pushing on the architectural axis fundamentally strains the compute infrastructure and the data requirements.
Show them you can balance the helicopter.
Right. Second, you have to embrace the two heresies. The rigid, orthodox religion of classical machine learning breaks down at massive scale.
You have to let it go.
You have to show the interviewer that you are willing to sacrifice mechanistic interpretability for emergent capabilities. You build guardrails around a black box rather than demanding perfect transparency.
Right.
And you have to show them you understand why massive overparameterization actually overrides the traditional fears of overfitting.
And finally, you have to weaponize your understanding of the macro reality.
Yeah.
The gap between open and closed models is evaporating. Knowing how open models use these axes and heresies to catch the frontier, that is your defense against the API trap.
It proves you can make intelligent, cost-effective, and secure engineering decisions based on the actual physics of the models rather than just relying on the marketing hype of proprietary tech giants.
It is about proving you understand the mechanics of the new world, not just the syntax of the language.
It is. And if we pull back and look at the absolute big picture of this framework, it raises a massive, I mean, almost philosophical question about the future of the
Oh,
industry.
for sure. Something to seriously mull over as you prepare for your interviews.
I love a lingering question. Let's hear it.
Well, we constantly talk about open models catching the frontier, right? As if the frontier is this static destination owned by proprietary companies with massive budgets.
Right, like OpenAI or Anthropic.
Exactly. But if open models successfully leverage these three axes and fully internalize these heuristics to continuously match or even exceed proprietary performance, will the concept of a closed proprietary frontier model even exist in a few years? Or will the new frontier simply be defined by how efficiently the engineering community can scale open architecture?
That completely flips the script. The frontier isn't a walled garden built by one company. The frontier is just whoever builds the most efficient transit system. Well, to everyone listening, as you prep for your interviews and make your leap into AI engineering, don't be afraid to question those classical orthodoxies.
Throw them out the window?
Lean into the chaos of the 3D space, understand the mechanics of the hardware and the architecture, and remember that the blueprint of this industry is actively being rewritten. You have the chance to be the engineer drawing the new lines. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll catch you next time as we continue exploring the mechanisms driving the future of technology.